real-time check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And welcome to Tuesday afternoon as we sit here in the Allstate Skyline Studio high above the Chicago River. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch, and welcome to the 4th of July holiday. I think about now is when you should be heading home. It's an early quit. It was for the stock market, I know. John Najarian, as he does traditionally, is celebrating the 4th of July in Greece today. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Well, always great to be on with you, Stephen. Hopefully our connection holds. It's great to be in Greece.
You are a world traveler. Is this vacation, or are you there working some more?
It's a little bit of both. Yeah. We've been doing some meeting with clients and some cryptocurrency deals. And other than that, it is supposed to be a holiday, so I'm trying to relax as much as possible. It's not tough over here in Greece to relax.
I would imagine not. Okay, so things looked nice on the start of the trading day on Wall Street. They were talking about 4 days of gains in a row, but then in the past several minutes before Wall Street closed for the holiday, the Dow took a tumble anyway, closing down, looks like 132 points. NASDAQ was down 65. Volume pretty light. So what do you make of today's trading?
Well, it seemed to turn just as the Saudis agreed to that production increase in crude oil, which I guess, you know, since energy stocks, they're not as big as tech stocks are in the industrials or the S&P, but they are still a significant part, and energy-related plays went south with crude oil. Even though crude oil did bounce, it was down about 1.5%. It's only finished down, I think, 0.25%. So I think if we had extended the session to a full session, we might not have seen a 130-point decline, given the comeback that we saw out of crude oil.
And the energy stocks were leading the increases early in the day, so as they tumbled, it only makes sense that it all disappeared. Caterpillar had another rough day. I don't know the headline for Caterpillar. Do you know why they might have suffered today?
I don't. I know at least this time it wasn't the same as last time, which was when the CFO, Chief Financial Officer, said he didn't misspeak, but he said high watermark for our earnings, which rather than saying record earnings, which sounds great, watermark sounds like something you might not see again for a while.
It's so, all about the words.
Yep. Being a wordsmith is partly what these folks get paid for, men and women that craft those messages to the public. And this wasn't that, but I did not and was not concentrating as much on Caterpillar, but I did note that it was down.
A couple of transportation stocks, maybe. Tesla down quite a bit today. The chief engineer announced he was leaving. Harley was up more than a percentage point earlier in the day, and I bring up Harley only because the president was tweeting about trying to recruit overseas motorcycle makers into the U.S. to, I guess, compete with Harley because Harley was moving some production overseas. Tesla's probably the bigger story, and I just can't figure out, you know, if Elon Musk is sort of a, not an evil genius, but, you know, one of those, a genius that comes with great instability. I mean, if he's the way of the future or if there's a little crackpot there, or exactly what's going on with Tesla.
I think there's a lot of genius there. Yeah. I bet you'd agree.
But you know what I mean? John, my point is sometimes, you know, with extreme genius, there comes these idiosyncrasies as well that are sometimes hard to deal with. And I think it just seems to me like that's what's going on with Elon Musk.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, their numbers as far as Model 3 production were much better than people had hoped for. And so people who follow the stock closely on the bullish side were hoping that was enough to really lift the stock significantly and squeeze the shorts yet again, which Elon Musk is sort of famous for. And instead, Tesla did just like market, bled off and traded lower. And some of it is exactly that volatility of the CEO that you described, even though he is a brilliant CEO.
Right.
And I think, you know, probably 99 out of 100 companies would kill for Elon Musk to be their CEO. Nonetheless, it does come with some of that hair that you just spoke of.
Yeah, and the phrase that comes to mind is evil genius, and I don't mean that because it's not evil, but you know, sometimes when you're operating on a different plane, you're operating on a different plane. And I just think, I think we see that there. Sears announced some more of the stores they were going to close today. I was reading their stock has been down, was down 16% in June. It's down 70% over the past year. We've talked about Sears before, and it just seems as if it's a matter of time.
Yeah, it does. It's, of course, a retailer run by somebody who's, except for the, his experience since he stepped into their bonds, and that's Eddie Lambert. He'd never run a retailer, and a lot of retail folks would tell you that his strategy is simply not going to work, but Mr. Lambert is a very wealthy guy, and he stays that way by continuing to operate his fund, which, of course, operates Sears. I don't see him stepping away from that anytime soon, so unfortunately for employees and people that love the brand, he's seen just like he's hell-bent on selling it off in pieces until there's no more Sears.
I'll tell you what, John, I appreciate you joining us from Greece. I can hear the ocean breeze in the background. I want you to rest up, because when you come back, Amazon announced today that their Amazon Prime Day actually is going to be longer than ever, 36 hours. So you're going to need to do some shopping on July 16th.
Exactly. It's not just one day. It's a day and a half. So I'll be ready for it, Stephen, and I hope you have a great, safe 4th of July.
All right, and you enjoy yourself, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Kelly Leonard will be along a little bit later in the second half hour of the show, talking about his podcast, Getting to Yes And. And his guest this week is Howard Yu, who has written a book called Leap. It's about how traditional businesses can keep the copycats at bay and maintain their market share. Right now on a phone line, though, is Desiree Patnos, the CEO of Women in the Housing and Real Estate Ecosystem. She joins us on a phone line. Desiree, well, that's the wrong one, Desiree. Desiree, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
I'm glad you're here. So I'm reading about you and about your areas of expertise, and they seem pretty broad, right? I mean, we're talking about the real estate industry, but then also women as home buyers and as a market force there.
Absolutely. We've been around and championed the impact of women's independence. So it starts from poverty all the way up to C-suite women.
Why is it that more single women buy homes than single men?
Really, because we have an initiative called The Sanctuary for Dream, Stability, and Sanctuary. So having the impact of a place calling their own, you know, we want to be connected to the community. We want to really be involved. And having our own place is really leveraging that. So we're forgoing getting married. You know, we're working twice, three times the jobs numbers to just to make sure we have our own place.
Where are men living if they're not buying their own homes? Are they just staying in apartments, or did this take into effect condo purchases as well?
Well, the men, typically, they'll have roommates. They like to rent a lot longer because they like to be nimble. Women like to have roots. They like to settle down and have their own place where they can have their wares, whether that be clothes, shoes, or impact, or raise their families. You know, there's a lot of single women out there. And so single women home purchasing is a huge thing.
It's interesting to me because when I purchased my first condo, it wasn't that I wanted to give up my nimbleness, or necessarily, you know, or put down roots in the community, although I stayed in the community I lived. For me, my first condo purchase was an investment decision, a decision about the future. How does real estate investment play into all of this?
Well, obviously, it's the biggest form of wealth is that getting your home ownership. But and you can leverage that to play up and to get multiple homes, have rentals, as you were talking about prior to me being on the call. But the impact really is that more than just financial wealth. It's really about the sanctuary of the mental, the physical, and the financial aspect. So that's why the women are buying more homes. And so the idea is that when you can play and leverage that aspiration of starting your own business, let's say, you can run a business out of your home versus then in a brick-and-mortar building, it's a real power development and a sense of placement and well-being for women.
Well, tell me about that translation then, because there are women purchasing their own homes, but then you also work at and look at and encourage women getting in the business of real estate, right? Buying real estate for investments and things such as that.
actually not just for real estate investments, but also for they're starting their own entrepreneurial business. Remember, not just buying a and future real estate, you can actually be a cleaner, let's say, you know, doing your own construction business, doing, you know, training and tutoring. You can do all different kinds of things within the ecosystem of real estate, let's call it, in addition to leveraging and buying a home, let's say, every year. So there's a lot of women out there that have a power impact saying that I want to make sure I make enough money or put enough money away that I can start leveraging my passive income to have a home every year.
You said something in a speech once I was reading this morning, and I'm not sure I understand it. I want to ask you about it. The quote is,
sure.
Unlike their minority counterparts, women do not have geographical roots. And so the idea is that women have to work harder. I don't know that I totally agree with that. I mean, I think that women, there is a certain cohesion among women when it comes to supporting women-owned businesses, just like there might be African-American or Hispanic or things like that.
Well, let me play on that a little bit. Okay. So I came up with that quote a couple years ago, and what that phrase is all about is that if you went to a German party, let's say, you know what kind of typically the music, the food, the dress would be at a German party,
okay,
or Hispanic party or any other kind of diverse culture party. But if you go to a women's party, what kind of food, what kind of dress, and what kind of music? So typically, we'll go to our cultural heritage background before we'll go to a gender place.
I understand. When
we talk about, see that relevance in what we're talking about. So it's really about, you know, especially when we have so many mixes. I mean, I'm, you know, of 12 different nationalities now. I have, you know, I lean a lot toward two different countries, but the idea is that I'm third generation. Is we have to play into where we go. Do we go from, you know, women supporting women? So, yes, you have a lot more voice about women supporting women, but the reality is that you still have this divide on political party lines and things like that. So there's a lot of voice, and that's why we want to keep it very focused. We're a nonpartisan, non-candidate organization to really keep us have a seat at the table.
Desiree Patino is the CEO of Women in the Housing and Real Estate Ecosystem. It was great to talk to you. Let's do it again, okay?
All right. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
All right. I've been running around the office today with my new Food Switch app on my phone and clicking on barcodes of food. And, well, people in radio stations don't eat very healthy food, I can tell you that. I learned that pretty quickly. In the studio, Dr. Mark Huffman, who comes to us via Northwestern, but he's a collaborator on this app, Food Switch. Mark, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Steve, thanks so much for having me.
So there's so many different ways to go about this conversation. I want to talk about what it does, but first talk about how it got here, because it's been on up and running elsewhere around the world for, what did you say, the past 6 years or so?
6 years, yep. So the premise is that while food that we have in our food supply is delicious, it is making us sick, with diseases like hypertension, heart disease, and diabetes running rampant all over the world. And so we need to actually improve the decision-making that people make at the point of purchase while also improving the food supply itself.
And so what does Food Switch do?
So Food Switch is a free mobile phone app that allows consumers to scan the barcode with their smartphone camera and identify healthier alternatives at the point of purchase.
And it breaks it. Well, let's just play. You brought me in a bag of chips, Frito-Lay, salt and vinegar,
yes,
potato chips.
Yes.
Which I didn't know if you know this, but that would have been my choice.
Good.
So I'm just going to scan the barcode here.
Yep.
It gets a reading right away, and it gives me an overall food score of this. It's out of 5, I think 1.5 to 5, and it gives me a score of 2.5.
Right. So what it also shows you are alternatives to that
right,
purchase. And there's also a compare function. So say you like two types. I brought you in three types of sea salt and vinegar chips. You can compare those three options to find the healthiest choice for you.
And so, but when So I'm in the grocery store, and I've got three bags of chips,
exactly,
in front of me. I can check them all out.
You got it.
The alternative is when I just scan this one, it gives me a bunch of other choices that are healthier.
Correct.
They might not necessarily be on the shelves.
Right. And so we're actually looking at what's possible by seeing these leaders in healthiness, right? You see that it is possible to have healthier chips.
Right. And so the goal here is to, well, before I get to there, a couple of things. I can weed out for just a salt, right? If I want to focus on salt, or I can do in general, or how does that work? What are my options?
So there's a general Food Switch filter that gives a health star rating for each product. Health stars have been demonstrated to be easier to understand than traffic lights, but there is a traffic light option as well. Then there's a salt switch filter that prioritizes salt in the HealthStar rating.
Go back there. What did you say? The star versus stoplight?
Traffic lights.
Explain that for me.
Okay, so when you scan a barcode, you can get a variety of things like fat, saturated fat, sugars, and salt. So for each of those, the traffic light gives you a red, yellow, or green option about how healthy is it in that product category.
I see. Okay. And I was also reading when getting ready to talk to you that there's tremendous turnover in food products in this country every year. I had no idea.
20% every year.
So 20% of the food products on my grocer shelves will be gone a year from now?
Well, you might be buying more popular items. Those are the items that probably don't sell as well. What we're interested in is trying to have the turnover be more healthful year over year so that it's not just the decisions that you make, but that the default decision is healthier.
This is your hoping to become or to lead a groundswell of the change in the way we eat. And if you do that, if people go to the grocery store and they scan six different salt and vinegar chips and they choose the healthiest, the people who make those chips are going to respond and start providing more of them.
Not just at the grocery store, but you can do it in your pantry today.
Right.
You can, when you're creating your list to go to the grocery store, you can have healthier options ready
to
go.
So is your goal to make me healthier or to pressure the food producers to change what they're providing for us?
Yes.
Well, which is more likely? I think it's probably easier to start with me, but if it starts with me and millions of others, then it will start with them. It will end up with them.
It is possible to change the food supply. So in England, for example, over the past almost 15 years, there's been a reduction in salt content by about 1 gram per day. And so here in the United States, we could incorporate those changes by having data demonstrating exactly what's in the food supply. So just 2 weeks ago, the FDA enacted its ban on artificial trans fats in our food supply. So we collectively, as a country, have decided that we're not going to have trans fats in our food supply anymore. Imagine what we could do next.
But you've got to rely on, and not everyone's going to do this.
Correct.
You got to figure out a way to get everyone to do this, or how do you get a critical mass?
So we're working with media partners like you, so thanks for having me on the show, as well as the American Heart Association, Verily, and AstraZeneca, who are sponsors of the One Brave Idea Research Enterprise, led by Callum McRae at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, our media partners through Northwestern University, also our partners in Label Insight and the George Institute for Global Health, which started all this back in 2012.
Let's talk about Label Insight and just labels, because the other part of this, the crowdsourcing, it's just not just about the pressure on what you buy, but people who are in the grocery store can contribute to your success by registering foods that aren't registered so far.
Right. So
explain that for me.
Label Insight has the largest branded food composition database in the country, based right here in Chicago. They have about 75 to 80% of all foods, but some of those foods that you may have in your pantry, or I might have in my pantry.
For example, I ran across a tub of Tootsie Rolls today.
Okay. And what we need consumers to do is take a photograph of the front of the package, the nutritional facts panel, and the ingredient list. And that will help us round out the database so that it's updated in real time.
It's very easily done. So if you scan on something on the barcode and it says it's not in our system, it takes you through the next four steps, just basically four pictures or four scans, and then that will register. Just one person is enough?
Correct. So what we're doing then is having a program where we take those uploaded products, and then we have to update the data and make sure they're accurately categorized.
How long have you been up and running in the States?
Less than a week.
And so I guess it's hard to judge so far.
Correct.
It's Food Switch is the app. It's free. It's easily done. And my suggestion would be take the 4th of July off, and then on the 5th, download it.
No.
Okay.
It's perfect for the 4th of July. We talked about chips here. There's a 50 times difference in salt content in some of the chips that I provided you today.
I think that's a brilliant point, then. You're right. So you can have chips tomorrow. You can have better chips.
Fruits and vegetables are the cornerstone of your cardiovascular health as a cardiologist, but some people are going to still eat chips.
Doctor, Steve, tell us we can have a couple chips tomorrow. It's the 4th of July.
Let's choose a healthier chip, Steve.
Dr. Mark Huffman from Food Switch. Check it out. Really, it's pretty cool. Food Switch, the app. You can download it. I have an iPhone, but I'm assuming it's available on Android as well.
Yes. Both.
Listen, check back. Let's do this again to see where you are in a few weeks or maybe a couple of months.
Thanks a lot, Steve. I really appreciate it.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. The fight against cancer is a constant battle, and the fight continues on with the biotech company Calico and Illinois-based pharmaceutical company AbbVie. They've together committed over $1 billion to further their early-stage research. Now, if you haven't heard of these companies, AbbVie is Chicago's biohealthcare giant in the industry, and Calico is the arm of Google that is taking on moonshot healthcare issues, and they've been partnered together since about 2014. I don't think anyone's going to be upset about the use of all that money. All the power to you guys. But there have been plenty of complaints against local company Lincoln Towing. However, that's not going to keep them down. The Illinois Commerce Commission is finishing up their investigation into the company, leaning towards allowing the company to keep their operating license when 831 towing violations turned out to actually be 21. It's clear that it's difficult to run a business that's B2C and pretty much just punishes people. But there's an industry for everything. We'll see where it goes next. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Kelly Leonard is in the studio, the executive director at Second City and the host of Getting to Yes, and it's a podcast that you should check out. And just to prove it, we're going to talk about one of them this afternoon. Kelly, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me in the gorgeous new studio.
Oh, isn't it beautiful?
Really
cool. It really is nice. It's great to be here. Getting to Yes, and is, and we've said this, I feel like we haven't talked in a while.
So yeah, we haven't.
Getting to Yes, and is a phrase in improv, right?
Yeah.
Explain for that why that's important.
Yeah, it's all about the idea that if you want to get a bunch of ideas on the table, you can't do that by saying no. You have to say yes, and.
And if you want to be funny, you can't shut down your partner. You've got to encourage them to open up and
be more.
Got
to make your partner look good.
And so the idea is bringing that idea, getting to Yes, and. And to the business world.
Right.
Or the thought world. Okay, so you talked to different leaders in that way. In this week's podcast, you're talking to Howard Yu, who's the author of a book called Leap.
Yeah, he's a business professor based in Switzerland. And this book is all about why some companies are able to innovate and be successful over centuries, and that other companies, even though they're best or first, can't.
And so I was just reading a little bit about it, and the idea probably is that the companies that are successful today that started 150 years ago aren't doing what they did 150 years ago?
Right. So the best example to start with is one that isn't doing so well, and that's Steinway Pianos. So Steinway Pianos, and you all probably know this, is still the best piano that anyone has ever made. So a lot of the major concert halls still use Steinway Pianos. They only made about 2,000 of them. In recent years, whereas they were, you know, on top of the world when they first started. And one of the things that Steinway never did is they never innovated. They never tried to find to do something different. And then Yamaha comes along, figures out how to do upright pianos and then other kinds of pianos, and they're selling 900,000 pianos.
Wow. And so that's, you calls it a leap. You leap into something new.
You leap into something new. So here's the example of someone who did that, and that's Procter & Gamble. So if you look at the history of Procter & Gamble.
I love this story,
this
by the way.
This is the
best.
Yeah. It started with Ivory Soap, right? So they made this soap out of fats and animal fat, and everyone bought Ivory Soap. But they also have started innovating, and they made Tide. And most people did their laundry with Ivory Soap, and they realized that they had this new detergent, Tide, that was better for this, and they were scared of, you know, just ruining their cash cow. But they decided to leap forward anyway, offered out Tide. Well, yes, Tide became more popular. Ivory lost popularity, but Ivory stayed in the game, and then P&G did another thing. It wasn't just about manufacturing or finding new products. They figured out that they needed to advertise. And so they're one of the first big manufacturing companies, and it's where we get the term soap opera from. It's an advertising term, is they figured out that they needed to know how to market their product.
So what they did first was make a good soap.
Mm-hmm.
They branched out into another good soap, but realized they needed to, I'll say again, make the leap in a way to get this to market, and they and they're get in front of people. And so they sort of developed. They didn't develop modern advertising, but
they
man,
were early.
They certainly they dominated the TV shows we watched when we were kids.
Absolutely, and then still even today, what they got into data early. They got into behavioral science early. They figured out that for a company like theirs to last and thrive over years, you've got to continually reinvent yourself. You have to make yourself comfortable with being uncomfortable.
It's interesting because I can't do that, Kelly.
I'm very
comfortable being uncomfortable. But it's so what happens is these companies, then the way you describe them, it really speaks to the life of the company as
right.
a life form.
Yeah.
Because it's completely transformed us from infant to adult, or I don't know the right explanation, but it's like the company becomes the entity, not the product of the company.
Exactly. And I couldn't help but doing this interview and think about working at a place like Second City, which is certainly sort of first and best in our particular category. And like, well, okay, why have we survived at least for this first, you know, genre? I'm like, oh, we did change. We started as being just a comedy theater. Then we added classes and we were a school. Mm-hmm. Then we started going into the corporate market and applying our stuff there. And it made me really think of like, we got to start looking at what's next.
But so what you're doing there, I don't know, is the core changed or the core is the same for you?
Well, this is the important thing about this, which is you don't need to throw away the thing that worked before. You just have to find something adjacent or a way to add to it. So it wasn't that Steinway should stop making pianos. What they should have done, though, is figured out they could have made lower cost pianos to get into lower cost markets.
Right.
They could have gone to electronics. They could have gone into advertising, all those different things that they didn't do.
So Kelly Leonard, the name of the podcast is Getting to Yes And. You know, I mean, look what media companies do.
Yeah.
Right? Look here, WGN, we're talking about your podcast. GN is in the podcasting business because we talked last week or the week before about how audio is going to be the next big thing in social media.
Right.
Isn't that silly to say? I mean,
I know, but so it's not that the what you're doing is wrong or not good, but there's a different expression of it.
Right. And so find the new path do it. But I mean, to say that audio is the next big thing in social media because audio was the old thing, right? So
right.
It's sort of a new vehicle for the same old thing, talking over the fence.
It's just like, you know, making soap better.
The podcast is up at WGNradio.com
right
and everywhere else. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.